No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS.
You're with George Eliason,
live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is George Eliason with TNT Radio. Sorry I'm tardy. The big story today, I guess it's the only story coming out of the U.S. right now, is the raid on Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago mansion. Now, a lot of different threads are coming out on this. You know, one, some people are saying that the FBI must have something on the guy to be able to pull a warrant on a former president, because this whole situation, especially given the history of the persecution of the Trump family, is unprecedented. I mean, think about it. He went through 4 years of hell, then he went through another 2 years of hell, and now we have librarians trying to start an impeachment, sending out a platoon of FBI agents on a raid at Mar-a-Lago. Librarians, for God's sakes. These are the archivists at the National Archives. Who would have thought that librarians had that much power? You don't have any books out that are late, do you? No, seriously. This is crazy. What's even worse about this is when you go back in time a little bit, we have a situation where, you know, they're saying that Donald Trump has classified documents that are so secret that the citizenry should not even know about them. Well, why would you publish that? I mean, that kind of thing. But in the history of the U.S. government, now government officials aren't above the law, but we're talking about a former president of the United States. Presidents are given about 6 hours to move out before the next president moves in, and that's all. And they generally don't pack themselves. You can understand that, right? I mean, it's the president. So the people packing it grab what they believe is his stuff. Okay, great. Well, the National Archives contacted him, and he settled up with them that there were 15 boxes that they needed to look through. And that's last February. And for all intents and purposes, Donald Trump and his family were cooperating with these mad librarians. I mean, these people are crazy. Well, the librarian said that there were some top secret documents. Now, I don't understand what that would have to do with these crazy librarians to begin with. But okay, all right, now we have secret documents. But we're also in the presence of the one guy in the country that can declassify anything he wants on a whim. So even if there was that, did that happen? Now, let's really complicate this issue, because in the history of, let's say, people take or steal or stole top secret documents, I think it would be impossible to accuse the President of the United States of stealing top secret documents to begin with, but I mean, that's just me. Not cooperating would be, you know, not being cooperative would be a flag, yeah, but that didn't happen. But if you go back to the Clinton administration, you've got a guy named Sandy Berger who was working for Bill Clinton at the time, and after the change of power occurred, Sandy Berger used his national security clearance. You see, Donald Trump still had his too. But Sandy Berger took top secret documents, stuffed them in his socks, fled, hid them, and then was caught. And guess what Sandy Berger got for, you know, after the investigation? It was a misdemeanor. It's like a parking ticket. That's it. That was it. Then you got this guy, you know, you probably don't even know his name. He's just, you know, he stays out of the limelight and, you know, he doesn't really do anything flashy. A guy by the name of James Comey. You might have heard something about him. He worked for the FBI doing something or other. And for, what, 5 or 6 years, he led fake investigations against the President of the United States, knew about it. Now, this James Comey, who's supposed to be the epitome of law enforcement officials, stole FBI documents. Stole FBI documents. This is a guy in charge setting the entire atmosphere for the social climate inside the FBI. We want to be like the chief. The guy's a thief. Well, guess what he got? Nah. Did you ever hear about this? Some of you might have. But he got nothing. Nothing. But he stole FBI documents. Now, the difference between someone like James Comey and Donald Trump didn't pack his own bags. James Comey went into the filing cabinet and stole the documents. A guy you might have heard of a little bit, you know, in terms of the war in Afghanistan. His name is General Petraeus. He kind of ran a thing over there for a while. Big hero, this, that, yada, yada. Well, he stole classified military information, gave it to his lover, who was starting a fake company that did fake stuff to sell back to the military, and was actually in the press for being such a resourceful business person. And it was all a fabrication. So how bright is this guy Petraeus? He's stealing classified military documents to give to his lover, and he didn't get anything for it. We're going to go to a break right now. When we come back, we're going to have former CIA agent Kent Clisby's coming back on, and we're going to analyze this and a lot of other things. This is George Eliason with TNT Talk Radio, and I'll see you after the break.
You should hear what Patrick Henningsen's talking about.
August 8th was also the day of what a lot of Western pundits will say when Russia, invaded Georgia. That's how it's usually portrayed by all the sort of brains that you get and pass for geopolitical commentators. But actually what happened was Georgia attacked South Ossetia. Russian peacekeeping forces moved in and they pushed into Georgia in order to sort of neutralize the threat to South Ossetia. But that was basically an extension of NATO's announcement that year that they wanted to expand NATO to Georgia and Ukraine and to be eventually members of NATO. And the current conflict, the current hostilities that you see right now in Ukraine, that's one of the flashpoints, one of the triggers that led to what you've seen now in 2022. So it's important to have some perspective. It's important to have a little bit of history. If you don't have any history, if you're not factoring in the progression of events that have led us to this day, to this situation, then you're pretty much flying blind and you're at the mercy of whatever the short-term shallow narrative that's being pumped out by these bureaucrats and propagandists, you know, streaming into the mainstream press and then out to the public.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring. This is the sound of a generation rising above.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow. You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit RAIN.org, that's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Elias, and welcome back. And we have Kent Clisby coming back today. Kent's an ex-CIA agent, and he's noted for exposing Wayne Simmons' fraud. Now, Kent speaks six languages. He's a linguist. He's worked in counterintelligence, counterproliferation, counter-narcotics, and done extensive liaison work with foreign intel services. He's also worked in the intel community in interagency, intergovernmental intelligence operations since 9/11 and has his own company. Now, he was awarded the Intelligence Community SEAL Medallion, which is the highest civilian intelligence agency decoration for contractors. And that's quite a thing. Kent, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, George. Great to talk to you again.
I'm looking at that resume and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I forgot something. And he's a humanitarian. In between all these things, he's found time to do a lot of humanitarian work, which really makes this. It's like he worked for John F. Kennedy or something, way back in the day.
I appreciate it, George. Thank you.
The FBI search of the Mar-a-Lago resort. What's your take on this? They say they're looking for one thing, and then you start hearing it filter out. They're looking for information on January 6th that Trump may or may not have. They bring in a safe cracker, open the empty safe, maybe find Jimmy Hoffa or something. What do you think they're up to?
So it's really hard to read their minds and figure out exactly what their justification is or what they're thinking here. But I think that the larger issue and the most important issue is the politicization of the federal law enforcement and the FBI in particular. I wrote about this long ago in 2016. It was very clear that the FBI was going down a dangerous and really unprecedented path. And that was the first indication was their refusal to follow up on the Hillary Clinton crimes. And it was obvious then that the FBI was politicized and was anti-Trump and was doing the dirty work for the Democrats and specifically for Hillary. Since then, since 2016, it's only gotten worse. As we know, the entire Trump Russia fraud scam was based on politicized law enforcement actions to get the They used fake or false or concocted evidence to get the warrants to the FISA warrants, foreign intelligence surveillance warrants, so that they could surveil the Trump campaign, Trump and everyone else in his campaign. That was completely politicized, and they were on the slippery slope then. They've now reached the bottom of the slippery slope. So the excuse, whatever the excuse the public relations people are giving now, whatever leaks are coming out, and whatever is on the actual warrant that they got approved for this raid, doesn't really matter, because they can come up. They've got literally scores of lawyers and legal experts working this to get justifications that will stand up. But none of that matters. All that matters is the fact that we have now become, in effect, I don't know what the best analogy is, Banana Republic or the KGB. Oh, but we have a secret actually, police doing political hit jobs.
National state. I hate to say it, but you know, I've been tracking this thing, and this is equivalent to what became Nazi Germany right before it became Nazi Germany.
Yeah,
as we know it.
You know, George, I hear a lot of people making that the analogy, using the Nazis. I really don't think that's a good analogy. I think a much, much better analogy is the Soviet Union. Their entire apparatus for intelligence, for domestic intelligence, for party discipline. They took a national police force, and they actually had a very good model, the Okhrana, the Russian Imperial Domestic Police Force, Domestic Intelligence Agency. The Bolsheviks and then the Soviet Union took that model and improved upon it, and it is that, I believe, is the analogy here. I don't think that Nazis are a good analogy. What you have is a political party driving law enforcement and intelligence actions for their own political purposes. And it's a near mirror image of the KGB, of the various organizations that we know best as the KGB.
Now, you know, the whole thing that started it off was this secret organization called the National Archives. And these little librarians are the ones that actually started this action. And I still can't get over it. I mean, it's like Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Do you remember the library cop?
And I've never seen an episode of Seinfeld. I've never watched it. So sorry, but I'll take your word for it. It sounds exactly.
The guy comes in like 1992, wants to arrest Jerry Seinfeld because he didn't return a book in 1971.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was a bad year for the library.
So like I mentioned, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. They can come up with any justification. And this is one reason I really, really hated having a security clearance, because it dawned on me while I was under that under that regime that anybody that has a security clearance is violating some letter of a law somewhere every day, whether it's, right. There's just dozens and dozens of tiny little regulations, laws, you know, how to handle classified information, where to put it, who you can talk to about what, where, how, why, when. Dozens of issues that if it's interpreted exactly to the letter, anyone with a security clearance can be arrested and charged with a crime any day. So the justification we're hearing now, whether it's from the National Archives or whatever, it really doesn't matter. You have to draw back and look at the macro, which is that you have a politicized secret police that is going after a candidate. You know, Trump has not announced yet, but I think it's pretty clear that he's a candidate for president.
Right.
And we have an election coming up, and the current regime is terrified of what's going to happen in this election, and they're terrified of Trump running for president. So that's what you got. You have the secret police raiding a opposition political candidate's home and private offices. It doesn't matter what
the leader of the opposition party to boot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it doesn't matter what excuses they come up with. So that's, I don't even waste my time. I don't even look at what the excuse is. It doesn't matter. You know, and unless it's murder, unless they have Trump on video shooting somebody, and that's what they're going for. That's the only thing that would matter. Yeah, all of these technical security violations are they're just cover for the action that they're taking.
Well, that's my question, Jordan. I heard it a few times today, and it's a good question. After everything they've put the Trumps through over the last 6 years, you know, literally the most persecuted family in the history of America, president, okay, in terms of you know, politics, they have to, you know, they have to put the bread on the table on this one really, really fast. What happens when they can't?
It doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, they've just the raid in itself has the effect that they're looking for. This is all perception management, covert action.
But you don't think it'll energize Trump's base?
Sure it will. Yeah. But that's blowback. That's unintended consequences. These people have not, they are so convinced that they're right and that Trump is an evil person that must be destroyed in any way possible. They are unable to see the potential consequences of what they do. This is just the continuation of the Russia, Ukraine telephone call, every other deep state attempt to destroy Trump. They just keep trying. Well, that didn't work. Let's try another one. They don't stop and say, well, maybe that'll just energize the base. No, it's like, we got to destroy this guy. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. Let's try this. So they're not thinking it through. They're not worried about normal Americans' reactions to this.
I realize that, you know, FBI. Investigative agency versus what you did, it's a little bit different. So, you know, I'm not trying to pin you down on something solid on it, just to get, I guess, your feeling. Do you think now the FBI has two sides to it now? You have investigative, which is traditional, right? And then you have intelligence, counterintelligence, that for God knows what reason, Congress thought we needed back in 2006. Okay. How much of this do you think is emanating out of that intel side. That's why, you know, I'm wondering, okay, is this, you know, phishing? Because they really wouldn't care about the, you know, the legal investigative side at all. You know, in terms of in the FBI, I just don't see the average FBI, I guess, supervising agent saying, oh, hey, this is a good idea. Let's do this. We need this for our reputation. I just, frankly, I can't see it. And I don't see them as all as, you know, everybody in the FBI wants to vote for Hillary Clinton. I can't see that.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be normal investigators in the mix somewhere.
So I guess I get what you're saying. And I think that I'm wondering, did you follow the Russia hoax against Trump? Did you follow the deep details of that? Because I think the answer to your question is there.
I actually wrote more detail than is generally known in public about it.
Okay.
Down to the contractors who paid who for what.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what you got there is Peter Stroke was a counterintelligence. I'm not really sure. He was high up. He was high up next to the director, I think. That's where all of that came from. Counterintelligence. So first, the FBI is a law enforcement organization. They were given because of their perceived failures of 9/11, after 9/11, when they did the reorganization that created the Director of Central Intelligence, in part of that was giving a counterterrorism mandate to the FBI, including greatly expanded funding. Part of that counterterrorism mandate bled over into the existing counterintelligence. Counterintelligence in the FBI is traditionally focused on foreign threats, foreign and to some extent domestic threats to penetrate U.S. government organizations and to, in effect, steal secrets from U.S. Right. government. So post 9/11, suddenly they were perceived as failing. All of the attackers, the 9/11 attackers had all been in the United States for a long time, to some of them, and were flying under the radar. Most of them, some of them had come to their attention, but regardless, the FBI was perceived as failing in not interdicting that. That attack. So suddenly they have they are energized and empowered to rebuild their loss of face, and they have a huge budget. So that's, you have to look at what happened after that in that light. And they discovered that they could do a lot of things and get a lot of publicity by, if you look at virtually every single counterterrorism operation that hit the news after 9/11 that was in the United States, just about everyone was a mirror image of the operation against the poor schmucks in Michigan who were set up to be assassins of the governor. That is, if you look at them, they look like they were entrapped. It was entrapment. It was coercion. It was they surround them with all of these agents and cooperating. I forget what they call them, but in effect, they're recruited assets who are doing the will of the federal government. I can't think of one terrorist planned attack that was interdicted after 9/11 that wasn't a mirror image of that. And they learned really well. They learned how to do that really well. They'd been doing things like that in the past, but that post 9/11 really cemented their that sort of template. And as the Bureau became more politicized, which I believe happened, sometime after 9/11, it became politicized. And it's hard to exactly say when, but combine the politicization. It was definitely politicized by 2016 when Trump was getting ready to run, when it looked like he was going to run against Hillary.
That's a fact.
So Comey, by ignoring the crimes that the Clintons and Hillary had committed, by ignoring the emails that were leaked, it was clear that the Bureau was politicized. Combine that politicization with their refinement of the techniques of entrapment, it's horrible. But if you look at those things, so you got counterintelligence, counterterrorism, and then the traditional white collar crime kind of groups. But when you got the counterintelligence combined with the counterterrorism, and then you add FISA, which allows any, which gives, it was designed to allow domestic surveillance of foreign threats. So they figured the Trump-Russia collusion hoax made very clear that what our federal law enforcement was doing for a political hit was to tie in a foreign a faked up foreign threat to give them justification to surveil and to begin political operations against a political candidate. So and this is a long answer to a short question, but it's really important to understand where this all came from and why you can't really analyze it and think about it and look at it in a vacuum as, well, just trying to figure out why is the counterintelligence versus the normal law enforcement activities, what's happening. So it's a politicized.
Here's another
Bureau.
Question.
Yep.
Now this is digging into your experience as an agent. All right. I mean, this is what you did.
Yep.
Do you think the FBI in 2022, based on their history, what you're just talking about, has any business in intelligence work, or should they go back to be locked into their focus and investigative work?
that's a great question. And, the knee-jerk reaction is to say, no, they shouldn't. However, who would then? What's
you'd have
needed?
To create a domestic agency.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's needed is to depoliticize the Bureau. That's they probably are the right government agency to own domestic counterterrorism and counterintelligence. You don't want the CIA owning that for sure.
No,
that would be really bad. So the intent of, or at least the public intent of the reorganization of the intelligence community after 9/11 that created the DCI among other organizations and different sub organizations, the intent was great. There was definitely a weakness in our organization of the federal agencies that protect us, but the implementation has turned out to be really, really bad, and it has led to what we're seeing. So yes, they should be in charge of this, this type of thing, counterintelligence, foreign threats, counterterrorism in the U.S. domestically, but they have to be depoliticized. That, I believe that is, if we are to continue as the republic we were. Yeah. Thanks, George. I'm with you, brother.
No, well, you've got the military. You go through the ranks of the military, there is supposed to be one one of the overall characteristics of an officer is they're apolitical as long as they have that position. It doesn't matter if there's a Democrat or a Republican president in charge.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, if you make these people take an oath, which they're supposed to, right? I mean, Comey took an oath.
They all do, sure. To the Constitution.
Right. Shouldn't they, there's no framework for charging them for breaking their oath for this the politicization?
I believe there is. I'm not really sure what it is. I'm not really sure what that what the actions would be, and I'm not really sure who would take those actions. But there has to be some kind of mechanism for oath breakers to deal with oath breakers. So yeah,
no, exactly. Especially when they have the impact these people have. I mean, now we got a bunch of librarians that want to impeach Donald Trump 2 years after he's been out of office.
Yeah, it does. That is just a justification. You got to gloss that over. Don't even pay attention to all those little details. It's the fact that you
funny.
Have a politicized.
That's the only thing I have to laugh at about it.
Yeah, I guess so. It is.
You know, I'm picturing someone with horn-rimmed glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
not. It's the evil people that are at the management ranks that are manipulating and forcing those ladies in horn-rimmed glasses to say this, to do this. They're not doing it on their own, believe me. Yeah, no. So it really doesn't matter what that public relations justification is. It doesn't matter. This is the Peter Strokes of the Bureau taking this action. That's what's going on.
And here's a question.
I wish I could describe, laugh about it. Yes.
You describe these as evil people. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of your work life you spend profiling people. I mean, that's just, you probably size somebody up in 10 seconds, you know, at the top of your game.
Yeah.
How these people obviously don't see themselves as evil people. I mean, that they don't, you know, sit there and say, well, I'm going to, you know, buy a shark with a laser and we're going to put Donald Trump on a, you know, over the pond and, you know, do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They don't see themselves as evil people. What kind of psychological juggling or balance is involved in this for them?
So I think you... That's a great entree to another one of my areas that I have spent a lot of time researching and analyzing. And what I think it's important to understand the belief system of these people and who they are and what that belief system justifies.
We've
got
about 9 minutes left. And
I'm
going to need you. I'll need you back because I want the detailed version of this too.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the Reader's Digest version is these people are not liberal. These people are not progressive. These people are not Democrats. My terminology, and I believe that it works really well, is politically correct progressivism, is a belief system. This belief system is based on six bullet points. And they are all about hating and negativity. And that is America, the country of the United States of America, is racist, sexist, homophobic, imperialist, foreigner hating, capitalist, hellhole. Those are the six beliefs. And there's an action corollary, and it must be changed. That action corollary is the key. That justifies, in their minds, everything they do to destroy the hellhole that is traditional America. So that's what we're dealing with. And that is, it's key to understanding the political struggles in the United States, including the politicization of the CIA, of the FBI. So Peter Stroke, all of the people who took the actions that created the Russia hoax are politically correct progressives who are convinced that they are knights in shining armor doing the Lord's work to destroy this hellhole that is traditional America.
Now, I'm going to give you two different examples. The first one, if we go right up to the Oval Office, when they were doing all that, and Stroke was, you know, always in the news, all of a sudden this female agent came out and said she'd rather quit, that she'll never take a bullet for Donald Trump or whatever. I actually don't think she was fired for that, but this is a Secret Service agent saying her whole reason for being there. Well, you know, you have that and you have counterfeiting, right? You know, those types of investigations. But she'll never go out of her way to help Donald Trump. I mean, to say that publicly where it gets in the news, I don't know if, you know, I don't understand that particular, mental profile. Because
They're politically correct progressives that believe traditional America is evil. And Donald Trump, in their mind, is the personification of everything racist, sexist, xenophobic, homophobic, capitalist, imperialist. In their mind, Donald Trump is the personification of that. And they need to follow the action corollary, change it.
But this is the Secret Service agents. How didn't she think she wasn't going to get fired?
And because it's been politicized. Because these organizations are now politicized. They are owned by politically correct, progressive, PC prog mindset. Traditional America must be destroyed, changed.
Now, the second one, we have a few minutes. Way back when Antifa was starting to kick up in the riots, and I believe it was San Francisco, there was a brief interview with a little skinny guy with a mask and black clothes. And he said, well, yeah, I'm a school teacher. And he had a padlock in a sock. The school teacher. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any violence at that point that started that day, as a matter of fact. So how you go to a rally before the violence kicks up, kick up the violence with your little lock in the sock deal, but you're... You know, in real life, this is a guy that, probably very timid without his mask and his sock. You know, is this becoming a prevalent attitude, prevalent mentality among the progressives?
So absolutely. So next time we chat, I'd be happy to lay out the entire genealogy and history of where this came from. But suffice it to say for now that this mindset, PC progressive a belief system was designed to create people like the skinny dude, skinny teacher, who hates traditional America. There's three in the United States. We have three, or we did have three organs of cultural transmission belts, if you will. That's education and academia, the media, and Hollywood. The organization, the genius that created a politically correct progressive belief system targeted those three, education, academia, media, and Hollywood, and inserted this message, created groups that propagated that message, and it continued on and on and on till we have the situation today. So teachers, Dr. George S. Counts was in charge of the operation to insert the hate America first belief system into education and academia. He was a professor at Columbia's Teachers College, and he spelled out very clearly exactly what was required to destroy America. Counts is revered and taught in schools of education across the United States today. His approach is called social reconstruction. And that's what these poor twits like the teacher with the lock in his sock have been inculcated in. They've grown up being told, they went through their training being told, you're gonna change America. You're a good person. You're gonna destroy these racist haters. And you're going to create a better, better system.
Ken, we're about to go off. I wanted to thank you for coming back, and I would love to have you on for 2 hours. I'm telling you, because you're just a wealth. This George Eliason with TNT Talk Radio, and we've been listening to Kent Quisby.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it. Ken.